This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA. It's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
GSMC Sports Podcast. This episode is brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. And as always, I am your host, Jesse Tapia. All right, so it's Tuesday, and we didn't get to cover this yesterday, but Johnny Manziel played football for the first time last Friday. Didn't really look too good. We're going to be talking about that for this first segment, give my thoughts on it, and as far as what this does to Johnny Manziel's comeback to get back into the NFL. Second segment, we'll head over to the MLB, got some stuff to talk about there. Yankees ended up, if I'm not mistaken, winning yesterday against the Chicago White Sox. So like I said, we'll be talking about that along with anything else going on in the MLB. Third segment, Browns traded away Corey Coleman yesterday to the Bills for a 7th-round pick. Seems like the word around camp has been that Antonio Callaway has been playing really well. Looking like he's kind of the one who force Coleman out, meaning he's just played well enough to the point where you got to put him on the field. And then today, we were notified that he was cited on Sunday for marijuana possession and driving with a suspended license. So I got some things to say about that. Also going to talk more about the Coleman trade, give my thoughts on it after the first day happened. And then for the fourth segment, we will be talking about anything else going on in the world of sports. So that's how today's show is going to go. So let's get it started with this Johnny football stuff. So as we know, Johnny Manziel, great Texas A&M quarterback, got drafted in the first round by the Browns, I think with like, what, the 21st, 26th pick or something like that. Plays a couple seasons there. Doesn't really look too great. Hugh Jackson comes in, doesn't want Johnny Manziel, cuts him, and Johnny Manziel's been out the NFL since. Last season being 2015. Johnny Manziel, I guess, has dealt with substance abuse issues and all that. Also some mental health issues, and now is trying to make his comeback. Obviously, getting to the NFL is going to be a bit more difficult, but he found his way to the CFL. Ended up signing with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Turns out their quarterback was actually pretty good for a CFL quarterback, so he didn't lose his starting job. And Johnny Manziel was then traded to the Montreal Alouettes. Manziel sits the first game because like, he just barely got there. Second game, he starts, and that's against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, his former team. Mind you, the Montreal Alouettes are one of the worst teams in the CFL. I think they actually might be the worst, and the Hamilton Tiger Cats, I think, are one of the best. So you figure, we're here sitting at the TV, all excited because Johnny Manziel's back playing football. Let's see if he can work his magic, see what he can do against these CFL players. They're not NFL players, so he's going to do pretty good, right? Nope, he was pretty bad, I'd say. In that game against the Tiger Cats, I believe he left mid-third quarter. He completed 55% of his passes for 104 yards and 4 interceptions. Yeah, yikes. I mean, it wasn't great. You could tell. Well, one of the interceptions wasn't his fault because of the fact that it hit off of the receiver's hands. And as far as his performance, like I said, it wasn't great. Johnny Manziel didn't look good. He showed flashes of the old Johnny football, but for the most part, struggled to connect with his receivers. And, I mean, when you're playing on a bad team, it's going to show, and it showed. So the game ends, like I said, they got absolutely blown out. Like it was like 28-0 or 7, I think, after the first. Like it was ridiculous. Montreal stood absolutely no shot in this game whatsoever. Johnny Manziel could have played like how he did at A&M, and it wouldn't have mattered because the players there aren't really good at all. So, I mean, you could have two takes on this. You could have the take of course, I knew Johnny Manziel couldn't do it. Now he's playing in the CFL and he threw four interceptions. He's never getting back into the NFL. He's no good. Or you could look at it in a way where the guy only had a couple practices with Montreal before that game. Was recently traded the week before. Let's not forget that the CFL has different rules than the NFL. Their end zones are longer, wider, whatever you want to call it. They only play three downs, so if you don't convert the first on second, you got a punt on third, unless, of course, you want to go for it. Your receivers, tight ends, can move all over the place before the ball snaps. There's no false start or anything like that as far as them moving around, meaning they can pretty much line up 10 yards behind the quarterback and do a full sprint as the ball's getting hiked. Just don't be offsides. So there's stuff like that. And like I said, I mean, this is one of the worst teams in that league. And when you give Johnny Manziel only a couple of practices to work there, especially after he hasn't played a football game since 2015, it's not going to be easy. So I do give Johnny Manziel a pass here. And like I said, Johnny Manziel did show flashes of the old Johnny football. On one of his interceptions, as bad as that sounds, looked like he was going to get sacked. I mean, he got away from everyone there. Ended up throwing it deep when in reality, probably could have just thrown it to one of the guys right next to the first down line. But he throws it deep. That gets picked. But like I said, I mean, as far as him moving around the pocket, being elusive from the defensive tackles and defensive ends and all that, I mean, he looked all right. And I might just be grasping for straws here. I do enjoy watching Johnny Manziel play football. But like I said, I'm not going to go out and say that this is what's going to keep him from being out of the NFL this game. I've always said that if Johnny Manziel was ever going to make it back, he probably has about a two-year window to do that. So, I mean, it's not like he has to get back this very year. And even I'd say right now he's probably, 26? He's probably got 3 years. As long as he gets in before being 29, I think he'd be fine. So, I'm sure Johnny Manziel's going to spend a couple of seasons in the CFL. I think this has got to be a long-term type project for him. I don't think that the NFL is something remotely possible for him right now. Just given that he's got to show what he can do in the CFL. He's got to start winning ball. Well, not even winning ball games, but just playing well. Because I highly doubt that NFL scouts are going to care what his team record is. As long as the guy's playing well, like let's say he's putting up 32 points, the defense is giving up 33, he'll get a shot, I think. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. Like I said, the CFL debut wasn't great. But I will say this also. CFL, it's some pretty good quality football, dare I say it. I mean, you got guys who played at D1 schools, top D1 schools, to guys who couldn't cut it in the NFL. So, I mean, it's not like, and when I say couldn't cut it in the NFL, I'm meaning guys who maybe played a couple of years there, guys who at least got some training camp invites. So it's guys who got talent. And like I said, it is very entertaining. It's not, and when I say like the rules are different, it's not like it's a completely different game from the NFL or anything like that. Like, they're still playing football. The fan atmospheres are pretty cool, too. Montreal ended up selling out that game. I'm curious to see if Montreal sells out their next game or if the Montreal fans have already given up on Johnny football. Because, I mean, you could tell how hyped up they were for that game. Because you had ESPN showing them all during the pregame and all that. Everyone had their Johnny Manziel football jerseys. But, like I said, not really what they expected. And let me see if I can pull up Johnny Manziel's when his next game will be. And like I said, I mean, I don't really think this is a game where come to a conclusion that, yeah, Johnny Manziel doesn't have it anymore. Give the guy some more time. And I'd say that he'll get better. I think he'll definitely get better. The guy knows how to play the quarterback position. I will say this. One thing that did hurt him over at Texas A&M was that Kevin Semlin gave him way too much freedom, meaning the way they ran that offense as far as if your first option's not there, then do whatever you can to get us a first down. didn't really help Johnny Manziel too much. And Johnny Manziel has talked about that in numerous interviews and all that. So, I mean, what can you do there? Also, some things never changed. Mike Sherman's the head coach of that Montreal team. The same way he was calling questionable plays over in Miami as the offensive coordinator is the same thing that's happening with Montreal. I just honestly just don't think Mike Sherman's that great of a coach. I mean, you could tell with that Montreal team, some of the plays they were running weren't working out. I mean, it was a bit ridiculous. That whole team is in shambles, I'd say. That's how bad they are. They have one win this season, and even I followed a couple CFL reporters to see pretty much to follow what they think of Johnny Manziel and all that, but they were talking about how Montreal getting that one win was kind of a shocker. So the guy, like I said, doesn't have much to work with, but he's going to have to get better if he ever wants to make it back into the NFL. So we'll see what ends up happening, but we're going to wrap it up here. Next up, we're going to be talking about the MLB, so stay tuned, and I will be right back.
Are you looking for the very best NFL and college football podcast? Then check out the GSMC Football Podcast. Get the latest football news both on and off the field. From the NFL draft to trades to the rumor mill to the NFL combines, they got you covered. That's gsmcpodcast.com/football-podcast. Get updates on college rivalries, game day insights, and much, much more. It's football talk the way you want it. This show eats, sleeps, and breathes football. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
And welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We spent that first segment talking about Johnny Manziel and his CFL debut. Only completed 55% of his passes for about 104 yards and 4 interceptions. No touchdowns there from him. Not great. Not a great debut at all. I mean, plenty of eyeballs on him. I'm sure the ratings were pretty good for that game. But it's going to be a long-term process for Johnny Manziel to ever make it back into the NFL. He had a real good first opportunity getting drafted in the first round. Didn't make the most of it. So now, like I said, he's probably going to have to spend a couple years in the CFL before any NFL team really looks at him, at least seriously enough to think of signing him. So, like I said, we talked about that. We'll see how it goes for him. But either way, now we move on to the MLB, where the Yankees were the story for Monday. They were coming off a 4-game sweep, well, getting swept by the Red Sox in 4 games. A's also swept the Tigers over the weekend, so that kind of narrowed the gap as far as the first wild card spot. Yankees still maintaining that spot, but only 2.5 games up heading into yesterday. So like I said, story was on them. Haven't been playing well. Been real. I think they're 18-20. Well, before yesterday, they were 18-20 in their last 38 games, pretty much playing like a poor team. So, I mean, you're looking to see what they do heading into Chicago, playing the White Sox, and I mean, it went about as well as it possibly could. Lance Lynn pitched a little over 7 innings, only gave up 2 hits, had 9 strikeouts. They recently traded for Lynn over the trade deadline. Lynn is the guy who basically forced Sonny Gray out to the bullpen. And I mean, if this is Sonny Gray's replacement, the Yankees got to be the happiest team in the world. Because Sonny Gray was going out there pitching about 4 or 5 innings at most, giving up however many runs he could in that time. And you knew every time Sonny Gray pitched for the Yankees, it was a guaranteed loss for that team. If you get Lance Lynn coming in, obviously he's not going to keep throwing a bunch of shutout innings or whatever, but if he's only giving up about 1 to 2 runs, giving you about 6 to 7 innings a game, you're going to take that and you are going to run away with it. So, obviously a great start by him. And looking at them, they did put up 7 runs, beat the White Sox, like I said, 7-0. Let's see, you had Gleyber Torres went 2-for-5 with 2 RBIs. Didi Reyes had 2 hits, had a 1 RBI. Hicks had went 2-for-5, had an RBI also, and then you had Neil Walker with went 2-for-4 with two RBIs there. Let's see, how did Stan do? Stan went 0-for-3, got walked twice, did score a run there. So overall, real solid performance by the Yankees. The White Sox, I mean, they're just a bad team. I think they're 41-71 right now. Obviously nothing to talk about as far as they go. But like I said, right now the Yankees are basically trying to pick themselves up. I think that the AL East is out the question now. I mean, right now the Red Sox are what, 9.5 up? And you figure that every team in the regular season tends to have a week or two where they go on a little slump. But even then, so, I mean, I find it hard to believe that the Red Sox would go on a slump so bad to the point where the Yankees would be able to make up a 9-game difference. I mean, this is probably, depending on how they do in the postseason, the best Red Sox team of all time, given the start that they've had. I mean, they've been dominant as far as pitching. They've been dominant as far as hitting. I mean, they're leading in basically every major category, at least near the top in every major category as far as hitting goes. I mean, the run differential was plus 191, which is, I believe, yeah, second in the league to the Astros, who are at plus 201. So, I mean, right now, like I said, the Red Sox can go on a slump, but I just highly doubt, given that the Yankees are going to be without Judge and Sanchez for most of this month, that the Yankees are able to make it up at least this month and even next month. I just don't see it happening, but we have seen Red Sox collapses before. Let's not act like it doesn't happen. I think go back to the, was it the 2012, 2013 year, I think? No, 2013 is when they won the World Series. Or am I getting my years mixed up? They won it 2004, 2007, I believe, 2013. I think it might have been 2012 or 11 where they had Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford. Remember, they brought them on that season. And Red Sox were in first to start September by a decent amount of games. And, I mean, just the collapse happened and they ended up missing out on the playoffs, I believe. I remember it correctly. It was a few years ago, dare I say. So, I mean, we have seen crazier things happen. So, like I said, as far as the Red Sox playing well, yeah, it looks like they're the best team in the MLB right now. Yeah, it looks like that AL East is all but locked up. But I would not rule out the Yankees just yet. I mean, it'd be kind of lazy to. So, we'll see how that AL East ends up shaking out. But let's see what else is going on around the NBA, or not the NBA, the MLB. The A's acquired a starter from the Tigers. A's looking real good right now, making a lot of moves. I mean, it's very different to see them be buyers, but they ended up trading for a right-hander, Mike Fiers, from obviously the Tigers, like I said. He's 7-6 this season, 3.48 ERA. Played with the Astros last season, but did not, like, he wasn't included on any of their rosters. So, can't say really that he's got great postseason experience. I mean, it says that his only postseason experience is a relief appearance. Made one relief appearance for the Astros in 2015, the ALDS. So, I mean, obviously pitched well. This is not going to be a top-of-the-rotation type of guy. Going to be the back end. Possibly could even be come in for relief. So, we'll see what ends up happening with him. But I do like the fact that the A's are now buyers. Because of the fact that in a couple years, all these young guys, they got like Chris Davis, for example. Chris Davis, I mean, there's no way he has more than a couple more years left on his contract. I even think next year might be the last year on his deal. There's no way that the A's keep Chris Davis long term unless there's not really a market for him out there. And I mean, the guy really is just a DH, so maybe he's just an AL type player, wouldn't make his way over to the NL. So maybe the A's do have a chance at keeping him. But that's only if he's been kept a secret for long enough to people just haven't noticed him. Because I think right now he's got 33 homers. He's hit about 15 or 16 go-ahead homers this season, I think, which is good enough for the most in the league, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, the guy is a clutch hitter and he hits for power. And that's one of the problems. I don't think he's like a guy who really hits for average. But, I mean, you can't really go wrong there if he's going to be an DH for your team. So, that's one guy I'm kind of keeping an eye on. I've been watching him for the last couple of years, being that, I mean, living in California, you're always going to be around A's fans and all that. So, he's always been someone they've been excited about. But like I said, are they going to be able to keep him? And I mean, the owner's got to start putting some money into this organization. I get it, it sounds cool, and you get to make Moneyball movies because you have one of the lowest payrolls in the league, and you can every 5 years make the playoffs, but there's a point where maybe the fans deserve a little bit more, dare I say it. Crazy idea, right? But of course, I mean, I guess it's the way the game goes. Brad Pitt's probably waiting for that phone call. Because, I mean, how do you not make a Moneyball 2 if they end up taking the top wild card spot? Like, it's just perfect. Let's go over Moneyball 2 real quick, okay? Let's go over Moneyball 2. So the A's, last couple of years, been down in the dumps. A couple of years before that, made the wild card games, made the playoffs, but didn't really do anything. And let me see if I could get the past A's records. But like I said, no one was expecting them to do anything this season. And they started off the season. It wasn't like they started off the season hot either. They were a 500 team for most of it. And then it's just they hit this run and they've been flying ever since. So let's see. Obviously right now they're 67-46. Couple games back of the Yankees for that top wild card spot. Last year they were 75-87. 2016 they were 69-93. 2015, they were 68-94. 2014, I believe, is the last time. Actually, they were 87-74. 2012, they were 94-68. Well, 2013, they were 96-66. 2012, they were 94-68. So, haven't really been over 500 since 2014. Last 3 years have been down in the dumps. Terrible team. And now, here they are, back once again. So, you got the plot, the back end story. You got them playing well. Starting off the season, it's just like Moneyball 1. Started off the season not too hot. Kind of so-so. You got talent, but not enough. And then you just erupt. You're winning ball games. Chris Davis, the player to watch for. Just like Scott Hatterberg was in Moneyball 1. Chris Davis is the guy you focus on here, too. Like I said, you got the evil empire Yankees, who they're trying to catch. Getting closer to the Astros. Could possibly, if they end up taking over that top, well, if they take over that top wild card spot and have a playoff, the wild card game at home, I mean, the story could end there if they lose. They win, you play the best Red Sox team of all time in the playoffs. You lose there, still a good movie to make. You win there, movie gets even better. You make it to the ALCS where you're most likely playing the Houston Astros, your division rival. You lose there, great movie. You win, movie gets even better. I'm telling you, if there's not a Moneyball 2, then there's going to be a problem. There is money to be made with Moneyball 2. And I'm curious if they've already got the naming rights already bought and trademarked and all that. I mean, I feel like you got to get ahead of these things. The A's always have a season like this, and it seems like this is the year they're having that season. I mean, it'd be ridiculous. They get the second lowest payroll in all the league. Come on now. Who's writing the script? Someone's got to be writing that script. We'll see. But like I said, if they end up hosting that wild card game, I want Moneyball 2. I want Jonah Hill. And I want Brad Pitt in that movie once again. So, that's all I got to say about that. Let's look at yesterday's scores and see what was going on around the league. So, we had the Indians beating up on the Twins 10-0. I mean, basically, the Indians have been beating up on the AL Central all year long. And don't sleep on the Indians. Indians, that's a scary team when you're not talking about them at all. They've got no publicity this season. The Mets beat the Reds 6-4. Not great if you're the Reds. You never really want to lose to the Mets given how poor they've looked this season. But Noah Syndergaard did pitch yesterday, so I will give him a pass. The Marlins beat the Cardinals 2-1. Like I said, Yankees beat the White Sox 7-0. Mariners trying to keep pace with the A's and Yankees for those two wildcard spots. The Mariners beat the Rangers in 12 innings 4-3. Cubs beat the Royals 3-1. Rockies beat the Pirates 2-0. Phillies lost to the Diamondbacks 3-2 in 14 innings. You had the Angels beating the Tigers 6-2. Astros beat the Giants 3-1. So that's how yesterday shaped up. We're going to wrap it up here. Next up, we're going to be talking about the Browns. So stay tuned, and I'll be right back.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA. From the UFC to extreme cage fighting, they got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com. gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
And welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. So far today, we spent the first segment talking about Johnny Manziel, spent the second segment on the MLB, and now move on over to the NFL, where we talk about the Browns. So, like I said yesterday, we talked about it. They traded Corey Coleman over to Buffalo for a 7th-round pick. Basically nothing for the first-round pick that they used on Corey Coleman to get him. And, I mean, you figured that it was either Dez Bryant going to be coming in or Antonio Callaway has been looking real good in camp. And the story has been that Antonio Callaway has looked really good in camp and looking like he could end up on the field to start their game week one. So I think that's probably the biggest reason why they felt the need to get rid of Corey Coleman. Plus, there's the fact that Corey Coleman has only played about 19 games over his first two seasons. Obviously, that's not great. But the problem here is Antonio Callaway was cited on Sunday for marijuana possession and driving with a suspended license. I mean, I guess this was a problem about Callaway heading into the league and draft and all that. I think he failed his combine drug test. And obviously the Browns knew they were taking a risk here. So this raises a lot of concern for me, not just about Callaway, but about the Browns. And I got some questions. So, this Browns team, for the most part, this Browns front office, I should say, for the most part, I think has done a pretty decent job, at least up until this point, in the offseason. Bringing in Jarvis Landry, trading for Tyrod Taylor. I think I like the Baker Mayfield pick. I mean, Big 12 quarterbacks have never done well in the NFL, but maybe Baker Mayfield can be the exception. I like the defense, and I like the draft. But I think I might have a bit of a problem with the Corey Coleman trade now that I've learned a little bit more about Antonio Callaway. So, Corey Coleman is nothing special, at least from what he's shown us his first couple of years. Corey Coleman has struck me since he's been in the league the first 2 years as a number two receiver. He's not really the explosive player that everyone thought he'd be once he came out of Baylor. His first year, he only played 10 games, had 33 receptions, 413 yards, 3 touchdowns. Last year, he only started 8 games, had 23 receptions, 305 yards, 2 touchdowns. So in half a season, he only brought in 23 receptions. On a team that had terrible receivers, and he was far and away the best. There. You give him another 8 games, double his numbers, that's only 46 receptions for about 610 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's not great at all. And the Browns felt the need to trade him. Okay, fine. But if you're the Browns and you have a receiver in Josh Gordon who has dealt with substance abuse issues and basically on his last strike, meaning if he ends up getting drug tested again, he fails it or anything like that, he's basically out the league forever. And you also got a guy in Antonio Callaway who you drafted this season who also has substance abuse issues. Why do you get rid of Coleman? And I'm not saying I hate getting rid of Coleman, because like I said, I don't think he's anything special, but there's a point where you need a plan C, a plan D, and a plan E, or whatever comes after, you know. Jesse was never good at the alphabet. I mean, this training Corey Coleman there makes sense. Plus, if I'm not mistaken, I think Ricardo Lewis is still hurt, so obviously the depth of that receiver is pretty weak there. Maybe, just maybe, they're thinking about bringing on Dez Bryant still. And that's why they traded Corey Coleman. Like, maybe they're real close to a deal. I mean, that's all a possibility. But like I said, it really makes no sense to trade. It doesn't make sense to trade Corey Coleman if you know the guys on your team aren't trustworthy enough to where you can count on them to be there. Because, I mean, Corey Coleman getting traded means that there was no use for him there. And we'll see what ends up happening with this Browns team, but they got a lot of talent, and I'm thinking that maybe they might just be turning into the Browns, meaning they're going to find some way to mess this up. Because, I mean, the fact that Coleman, like, he's got to get this, or not Coleman, Callaway, he's got to get suspended, right? I mean, driving with a suspended license, marijuana possession, that's about 4 games right there, if I'm not mistaken. It might be 2, since he's a first-time offender, but I have to double-check the rules and all that. So, I mean, as of right now, it's looking like maybe the Browns, if Callaway gets suspended, open up the season with Landry and Gordon. I'm not sure who your third receiver is going to be. And also, too, I mean, I've been seeing that. I saw it a couple times, not sure if they're still doing it, but the whole point of them throwing Jarvis Landry on the boundary, having him play on the outside rather than the slot. That is something that you do if you don't want to be as successful as possible. Why are you going to move players to the outside when they've been slot receivers their entire career and done extremely well at the slot? Jarvis Landry is the best slot receiver in the league. It's not close at all, but you're going to move him to the outside. Why? Who knows why? And I'm not sure if it's Todd Haley running the personnel or if it's Hugh Jackson. But either way, someone's got to be smart enough to know, hey, maybe we shouldn't overreact to all this and we should just put players in their normal positions. I mean, what a concept, right? Ridiculous. And I mean, there's not really a lot of pressure on the Browns this season. But they got a team good enough to where they could win 7 to 9 games. I mean, that's very much a possibility. But of course, if there's just like a Browns curse where the front office and head coaching staff and all that doesn't know how to run a football team, then it's all for nothing. And I really do think the Browns could be Brownsing this whole situation, which is terrible for them. I mean, we'll see. We'll get a good look at them on Thursday. If they are they playing Thursday? Let me double check that. And also, too, we got Hard Knocks starting up tonight, August 7th. I'll definitely be watching. Hard Knocks is what, a half hour, I believe? I can't remember exactly if it's a half hour or an hour long just because of the fact that Hard Knocks hasn't really been too great over the last couple years. Like last year, I tried getting into the Tampa Bay Buccaneers one. That really wasn't a fun one to watch. So let's see. The Browns play. It's got to be on Thursday. Yeah, they play Thursday against the Giants, 4 o'clock Pacific time. So we'll see how Baker Mayfield looks. And I guess Baker Mayfield's supposed to be playing a lot too there. I'm curious to see how much Saquon Barkley plays in that game, if he even plays at all. Because I remember in the Hall of Fame game, I mean, a couple of the rookies I expected to play didn't really play at all. So we'll see about that. But yeah, look like Baker Mayfield's going to play quite a bit. I mean, we're not going to see Josh Gordon. We probably won't see Jarvis Landry much, if at all. Antonio Callaway, he'll be playing since he's not suspended yet or anything like that. And even if he was suspended, it wouldn't start till the regular season. So, like I said, we'll see how it all goes down. I mean, we got a lot of games coming up on Thursday. I can't wait for Thursday's preseason games. And I said I wouldn't do this. I set myself up for failure with the Hall of Fame game, and I'm doing the same here. But I think just with the Hall of Fame game, it's a week earlier than everything else, so those two teams are a little bit more cautious. I mean, plus two, we're going to see. Let's see, Sam Darnold played Thursday too. He plays Friday. We got Josh Rosen going on Sunday. Josh Allen on Thursday. So we'll see how it all goes down. But either way, just glad that football's back. I mean, it's been a while, hasn't it? So we're going to wrap it up here. Next up, we will be talking about anything else going on in the world of sports, so stay tuned. And I will be right back.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
And welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. Spent the first segment on Johnny Manziel, the second segment talking about the MLB, and the third segment talking about the Browns. And I was thinking, the Browns season has gone terribly wrong if at any point Baker Mayfield is the starting quarterback this season. Because if Tyrod Taylor is bad enough to the point where Baker Mayfield's got to come in, then I'm not even sure if they won a game up to that point. And I'm just thinking out loud, maybe, I guess, about the Browns. I mean, they got a real solid squad on offense, but it just seems like maybe they're starting to get into their own way, and that's a possibility, and it might just be an overreaction. But with Callaway, because he got cited on Sunday, Corey Coleman got traded on Monday. The Browns had to have known about Callaway before Corey Coleman got traded. Before they traded Corey Coleman. So I'm just thinking here, what's the bigger pick? Like, what's the big move here? You don't trade Corey Coleman and just stay put, given that you got your rookie receiver who you drafted, I think, in the third round, getting cited for marijuana possession and driving with a suspended license. I mean, Dez Bryant's got to be coming in. Or they got to have some other trick up their sleeve. Otherwise, I don't understand this Cleveland team. Because I figured Corey Coleman would be decent with the Browns this season being a number two receiver. But of course, I had no problem with them trading him given that I thought they had a bigger plan. And Corey Coleman hasn't really been great over his first 2 years. I might be a little too high on Corey Coleman than others. So, I mean, we'll see what the Browns got going on. But they are scaring me a bit. And at least with Josh Gordon, I mean, he seems like he's going to be back within the next couple of weeks. So there's no problems with him. But like I said, this Browns team is starting to scare me a bit. I really liked them bringing on Todd Haley, but if he doesn't got the right weapons to work with on that offense, I mean, it's not going to be pretty. So we'll see what ends up happening there. I guess today is the 10-year anniversary of the day that the Packers traded Brett Favre over to the Jets. I mean, Brett Favre playing for the Jets is one of the, like, that's going to be a trivia question one day. Like, that just happened for 1 year and didn't work out, so they ended up letting him go. And let's take a look at Brett Favre's time over with the Jets. I think they finished, what, 10-6 that year? 9-7? So yeah, with the Jets, finished 9-7. That was back in 2008. Threw for 3,400 yards, 22 touchdowns, 22 interceptions, which was a league high. Obviously wasn't great there. And then he goes to Minnesota the year after, 2009. I mean, weren't they were in the NFC Championship that game. Weren't they? I believe they were. That's the one where Brett Favre, against the Saints, for some reason felt like it was a good idea to throw across his body and ended up throwing that interception. But that year with the Vikings, they went 12-4, 68% completion percentage, 4,200 yards, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. I'm not sure really what got into Brett Favre that year. I mean, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions in your year 19 season. Year 19 season. That doesn't really happen too often. Let me see if we can look at Brett Favre's playoff stretch over with Minnesota. So with Minnesota in 2010. They beat Dallas 34-3. Threw for 234 yards in that game, 4 touchdowns. Brett Favre's Minnesota year might have been one of his best, dare I say. And then they lost to New Orleans 31-28. He threw 2 picks in that one, like I said, one of them being the one where he threw across his body at the end of the game. So let's see, that year they went 12-4, 4,200 yards, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. That was the lowest amount of interceptions he threw in his entire career besides his 1991 year where he only was able to play 2 games. He threw 4 passes in that one, and that season threw 2 picks. So let's see, as far as interceptions, given the amount of starts, that was his best. As far as touchdowns, that was the tied for the 4th most of his career. And as far as yards, 4,200, that was the 3rd most of his career. So yeah, that was a career year for Brett Favre right there with Minnesota. And I mean, Brett Favre, once he left Green Bay, played for the oddest teams. I mean, going to the Jets, obviously he got traded there, but playing for the Jets, I mean, Brett Favre and the Jets, just not a match. And then going to your team, your former team's rival, after you spent, what, from 92 to 2007, so about 16 seasons, you spent with Green Bay, and you go to their biggest rival. Oh, I don't know their biggest rival, might be Chicago, but a rival nonetheless, being Minnesota. Brett Favre is a crazy man. Hall of Famer, 3-time All-Pro. And where do we regard as far as, let's look at the all-time quarterback stats. I'm not sure what we think of Brett Favre when it comes to being an all-time great quarterback. I mean, the guy's got a couple of Super Bowls. Nearly got to another in his second to last season. So let me see real quick. Where's he at amongst pro or passing yards? He's second all-time in passing yards. Let's see. Passing yards, passing touchdowns. Where is he at there? Second all-time in passing touchdowns. So yeah, Brett Favre is an all-time great quarterback. And I guess it was just a point where the guy was just consistent throughout his career, because, I mean, his numbers don't necessarily jump out at you thinking, oh, yeah, this guy had 40 touchdown plus season or anything like that. He was just consistently throwing about 30 to 35 a season. So, I mean, he's top 2 in those stats. He's 29th all-time in passer rating, right behind Dan Marino. And, I mean, passer rating is a bit tough given that you got a bunch of active players who haven't really played too many years in the league, but either way is doing well. Passes completed, he's number 1 all time. Let's see, passing attempts, he's number 1 all time. Why don't we talk about Brett Favre, about, like, why don't we ever talk about him being the best quarterback of all time? At least in that argument. Like, that's a serious question too. Why don't we? He's number 1 in attempts, number 1 in completions, number 2 in touchdowns, and number 2 in yards. I mean, he is number 1 in interceptions also, I believe. And yes, he is by a wide margin. Maybe that's what keeps him out of it, I guess. But I mean, it's kind of like Larry Fitzgerald. We don't talk about Larry Fitzgerald enough either. Let's see, passing yards per game. This is where he kind of slips, I think. He's 19th all-time passing yards per game with 237. Let's look at some other quarterback stats with Brett Favre. Yards per attempt. Let's see. We're going to have to go ways down to find him on this one. And when I say ways down, I mean ways down. He's not even top 100, I don't think, in this one. Let's see, what other notable passing stat is there? to talk up Brett Favre. Yards per attempt. Let's see. Let's go pass yards per completion. That's a bit of a better one there. Let's see if we can find Brett Favre here. It's a lot of the older quarterbacks out here, too, that are up at the top, so it might be difficult. He might just be at the very bottom. That is a possibility. Cause you got, yeah. I don't think we're going to find Brett Favre on the top 100 of this list either. Or either. Is it either or either? I'm not sure. So he's not even top 100 there. But either way, like I said, he's top 10 in passing. Or he's top 2 in passing touchdowns. Top 2 in passing yards. Top 1 in attempts. Top 1 in completions. I mean, Brett Favre might be the greatest quarterback of all time, dare I say it. So that's all I got to say about that. Didn't think we were going to turn this into a Brett Favre segment, but we did. So like I said, thanks for listening to the GSMC Sports Podcast. As always, I am your host, Jesse Tapia. I will be back tomorrow, so stay tuned, and I will talk to you guys later.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.